This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
I'm Alex Smith with a case you probably haven't heard about. The U.S. federal government seems permanently on the edge of bankruptcy, as you know, and the public always wants lower gas prices at the pump. So now the Obama administration is auctioning off huge tracts of the Outer Continental Shelf to big oil and gas companies. Our guest, economist John Talberth, says that's a bad idea on so many levels. His group, the Center for Sustainable Economy, has taken the government to court to stop it. John Talberth, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you, Alex. Good to be on the show.
Well, surely the U.S. should be aiming for energy independence. Why is your group trying to block these new ocean oil rights with a lawsuit?
Well, first of all, the path to energy independence is not to take us down the path of more dependence on fossil fuels. I mean, A, it's not sustainable. B, it comes at enormous cost. And C, the resources that we're actually developing on the Outer Continental Shelf and elsewhere are not really being designed for consumption in the U.S. There's, in fact, a large portion of these programs that are being developed for the export market. So there's no real correlation between energy independence and the new fossil fuel programs that the Obama administration is pursuing, including developing the Outer Continental Shelf, which, of course, is the subject of our litigation.
Well, what is the official name for this program?
Well, every 5 years, the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management develops what is known as the Outer Continental Shelf Oil and Gas Leasing Program. That's the official name of the program. It was authorized by Secretary Salazar in late August, and we filed our lawsuit, at least the initial pleadings in our lawsuit, in early December.
Well, before we talk, John, more about that lawsuit, I think we need to deconstruct a little of what you said in the beginning, because there are fundamental issues at stake here. First of all, just as a business decision, why would they organize to sell off natural gas rights when gas prices are so low that existing leases haven't even been developed yet?
It's not just gas, it's oil. We're at a time when there's a record backlog of leases, not only of natural gas in the West and the Northeast, but of unused oil leases offshore. It makes one wonder, given just how sensitive these resources are, and given that we really need to be stretching out our oil and gas supplies as long as we possibly can, why the administration is rushing headlong into a new program to develop these leases offshore. So the only economics that makes sense is when you consider what these new oil and gas leases do for oil and gas companies' bottom line, their balance sheets. And what these companies get to do is put these new leases on their asset sheets as assets that they eventually have the rights to develop, and thereby keep their share prices high and keep interest in their companies high enough to keep going economically. So it's really just about helping oil and gas companies meet shareholder expectations and not so much about meeting America's energy needs.
Well, that sounds like a kind of subsidy. And I like the idea that your lawsuit raises the point that our children and grandchildren might have a right to national resources as well. That seems so obvious. Did the government consider that?
Not at all. One of the key contentions in our lawsuit is that the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, the Obama administration, did not consider at all, in any way, shape, or form, the vast economic benefits that could be realized if we defer new leasing decisions until we really demonstrate that there's a need for this oil and gas. And so, you know, under the National Environmental Policy Act, this is kind of known as the no action alternative, and it's supposed to be treated in a fair and balanced way in comparison with the action alternatives in a cost-benefit analysis. And instead of treating the no action alternative in a fair and balanced and unbiased way, the administration simply chose not to look at the economic benefits of waiting or not developing the resource at all.
Well, that's a major point. And then we have the huge costs of damages if another big oil platform burns or leaks offshore, like the Deepwater Horizon did. Did they look at that?
They purport to have, but as you know, the technology associated with deep water drilling, and just in the latest round of leases offered for sale, there's at least 32 individual lease sales that have been executed that are in waters even deeper than Deepwater Horizon. And we're at a point where the technology associated with keeping those wells safe is not nearly as far along as the industry makes it out to be, and as the administration thinks it is in the context of its programmatic documents it used, it relied on to authorize its new program. So the technology really isn't there. It's questionable. We're seeing evidence of that all the time. We just saw another drilling rig disaster in Alaska. We saw another drilling rig disaster just a few months after Deepwater Horizon and another one last summer. So clearly, we're putting our shores at risk for energy supplies we don't really need, and this is kind of the crux of the lawsuit, that when you look at the economics of the risk versus the benefit, it just doesn't add up.
Right. I did a little investigation into this. I had a look at the maps for the leasing areas, and some of them are in the fragile Arctic where there are no spare rigs to move over and cap a blown-out well or anything like that. And the maps show lease sales areas like huge in the Beaufort Sea and the Chukchi Sea, right on the very northernmost coast of Alaska. Is that what you found?
Yeah, absolutely. And then offshore in the Gulf of Mexico as well. And the irony is that we're, you know, should those leases be developed, there's a very high likelihood, at least in today's market, that the refined oil products and even the gas increasingly that will come from these wells will then just be shipped overseas. So Americans get all the risk and all the costs, but we wouldn't even get the benefit of consuming these energy supplies under this existing program. That's another consideration that the Obama administration completely overlooked in its economic analysis.
And there were some interesting little details on the maps. All the proposed lease areas in the Arctic appear to be within a line identifying, quote, polar bear critical habitat seaward extent, and also within an area marked subsistence high use, which I presume must mean space used by the Inuit people for their subsistence hunting. So the government knows both wildlife and Aboriginal people in the north are going to be impacted. Did the Environmental Protection Agency leap in there and do an analysis of that risk?
Just in a very cursory manner, but our lawsuit focuses on the benefit-cost analysis. And what we have demonstrated over and over again in other situations in the Arctic and elsewhere in the U.S. is that when these big infrastructure projects or big energy projects are put in sensitive subsistence areas, the government has an obligation to do it the best job it can to quantify the economic costs and benefits associated with developing the new project and developing new oil and gas leases on subsistence uses. They didn't do that. They didn't assign any kind of values to those subsistence uses or factor in the cost to subsistence users. And that's, again, another way in which the benefit-cost analysis is biased in this case in favor of new drilling as opposed to deferring or excluding areas that are highly sensitive.
Funny how it always works that way. This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with Dr. John Talberth, an economist who heads up the Center for Sustainable Economy, and that's based in Santa Fe, New Mexico. We're talking about new oil and gas leases being given out to major fossil fuel companies in sensitive and dangerous parts of the outer continental shelf. Well, John, when we think of climate damage, too, just consider the $60 billion relief package proposed for Hurricane Sandy. There's a lot more of those coming in the future if we keep pumping out this oil and gas. Did the EPA calculate the real cost of grabbing more carbon from the deep ocean shelves?
You know, that cost is, as we all know, is astonishing. And it just should be the governing factor in whether or not new fossil infrastructure is developed. What is this going to do to the Earth's climate? We already just saw today the announcement that 2012, at least in the U.S., was the hottest year on record. Every time we look at the temperature trends, it seems like we're on the worst-case scenario. And with that as the backdrop, it's utterly irresponsible for the Obama administration to be pushing new fossil fuel infrastructure development to the extent it is. And part of the reason they're doing that over and over again is based on faulty economic analysis that don't put a price tag on the cost that each metric ton of new carbon that is burned and goes into the atmosphere is creating on the economy downstream. So, you know, it's just another example of how biased and distorted the economic analyses on which they're relying to authorize these new projects.
Well, you know, we can't put a cost-benefit analysis on the fact that this kind of action drives some of my listeners nuts to see how insane it is to drill more oil and gas in the Arctic, just as we're getting all the news about the sea ice melting back and Greenland glaciers really are melting back. Doesn't anyone in the government see how crazy this is?
There are plenty of people in the government who see how crazy it is and talk to us behind closed doors, but when they actually make decisions, lo and behold, those people are kept in the shadows. And this is one of the tragic realities of energy policy in this country, is that notwithstanding all the positive talk President Obama engages in terms of, you know, we need an energy future based on renewables, and all the governors coming out together saying we've got to make the transition, and the public being loud and clear about it. When it comes to actual decision making, where we're actually putting federal dollars, state dollars, local dollars, you can follow the trail of that money right back to the new gas wells and the new oil rigs and the new coal mines. It's just, you know, one of the tragic aspects of energy policy in this country is that all the talk about renewables and making the transition in conservation and efficiency is all talk and bluster, while the actual decisions on the ground are to keep on developing new fossil resources.
Well, I think we're just addicted. So, John Talberth, please give us the details of the lawsuit against this resource sell-off. Who's backing the suit? Where is it filed and all that stuff?
Sure. Well, the Center for Sustainable Economy is the sole plaintiff. However, we are backed in the lawsuit in terms of providing legal support by the Institute for Policy Integrity at New York University School of Law. Center for Sustainable Economy has filed this suit on behalf of our partners and members who reside in the Gulf region, reside in the Alaska region, who are deeply concerned about America's energy policy and the risk of another blowout like Deepwater Horizon, and really want to see us taking the transition to renewables seriously. Now, there's three key issues in the lawsuit and three statutes under which we're litigating. Those statutes are the National Environmental Policy Act, the Outer Continental Shelf Lands Act, and the Administrative Procedures Act. In terms of the issues, there's three. First, we believe the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management relied on a deeply flawed economic analysis, as I just discussed, to approve the program. The analysis fails to either meet professional standards or those set by law. As one example, despite the legal requirements to only consider benefits to the American public of new energy resources that are developed, BOM actually considered oil and gas industry profits, including foreign firms and benefits to foreign consumers from export of the refined product. So that's kind of the first bullet, is the flawed economic analysis. The second issue is that the programmatic environmental impact statement that they developed under NEPA supporting the program is extremely biased in favor of new drilling relative to the no-action alternative that would leave oil and gas reserves in the ground for future generations' benefit. And the third issue is that the BOM failed to incorporate the option value of waiting to develop additional oil and gas reserves in the future rather than now, and to demonstrate that we actually need these oil and gas reserves in today's market. So these are the issues and the statutes we're litigating under.
And what court is it being filed in?
It was filed in the District of Columbia Circuit Court of Appeals, which is established by law as where one has to file in challenging the Outer Continental Shelf oil and gas program.
The House Budget Committee requested a report from the Congressional Budget Office on how much money could be expected from these leases. And in the Arctic, it's only a few billion dollars, and some of that goes to the state of Alaska, all that risk for so little. But who is the chair of the House Budget Committee? It's former vice presidential candidate, Tea Party backer, and deep friend to the oil companies, Paul Ryan. It's the same Ryan who wants to keep $40 billion in oil company subsidies. Paul Ryan got over $100,000 in campaign contributions from Koch Industries. He speaks to and for the Koch brothers at various events. He questions or denies the science behind global warming. You know, so congressional leader Paul Ryan pushes this sweetheart deal for the oil companies to get their hands on resources owned by the public. Do you think I'm wrong in assessing it that way?
Well, you know, there's only a few explanations, and that's certainly one of them. And again, getting back to the argument of why are we moving ahead with new leases, why the oil and gas companies are just sitting on a huge backlog of them, it gets down, to their balance sheets and the fact that they get to count these as assets, private assets that help prop up their shareholder value. So the entire benefit really is for the oil and gas companies. There's nothing to do with energy security and America's energy independence. You know, it's as good as guess as any.
Well, I understand that one auction for the offshore leases already went ahead in November 2012. Can your lawsuit stop the continuing sales of these public resources?
Well, if the court agrees with us, yes, it certainly will. We're seeking to remand the program back to BOEM to do an adequate job in its economic analysis and seriously evaluate whether new leasing is actually required at this time. If the court agrees with us, it would bring a halt to development of these new leases.
Well, now, I understand that Bolivia and Ecuador suggested they would leave some oil and gas in the ground rather than damage the climate further. They worried about future generations. But we're still not hearing anything like this from the U.S. government, are we, or are we?
We're not hearing anything at all. As usual, in the realm of energy and climate, the U.S. is playing catch-up. You know, now that the election is over with, perhaps the Obama administration can step up to the plate and demonstrate some leadership rather than lagging behind, as we've historically done.
Well, John Talberth, you're an economist, the doctorate and all for the Center for Sustainable Economy. The bottom line, is fossil fuel, is that economy sustainable?
Absolutely not. By definition, it's not sustainable because there's only a limited amount of reserves, and there's even more limited amount of reserves that are economically feasible to develop. We may have already hit that mark. In fact, the scientists tell us, just from a purely from a climate change economic standpoint, that we need to be looking at leaving at this point 60% to 80% of the proven reserves in the ground as the only way that we're actually going to be able to meet the objective of holding the global temperature rise down to 2 degrees centigrade by 2050. So we may have already reached the point where developing new fossil fuel resources is impractical for economic reasons and for climate reasons. And it is our intent in this lawsuit to get the government to seriously consider the benefits of deferring or not developing the resource at all. If it does need to be developed, then perhaps it needs to be developed at a time where we really need it, when we're not exporting oil and gas at record levels.
Well, I think you may have hit it with your suit by saying the benefit goes to the shareholders, because in a way, this oil development industry, the exploration that goes on and on at tremendous cost, it seems to me like it's sort of a Ponzi scheme, that if you ever get to that point where you say, well, we can't afford to develop anymore, so just stop the exploration, that oil industry might collapse.
Well, they're going to be forced to make a transition, that's for sure, but that's the transition that needs to happen. I mean, we have to stop postponing the day of reckoning where oil and gas companies get into a new line of work. But this is what they have to do.
Well, is there anything else you'd like to add? And also, is there a website where people can keep track of what's happening with this case and these leases?
Yeah, absolutely. The Center for Sustainable Economy website at www.sustainable-, the dash is very important, economy.org. All the updates and the postings and the lawsuits and the filings in the lawsuit are available there, and we will keep you up to date. And just in closing, you know, I just have to say that in the run-up to the election, it was apparent that both the president and Mitt Romney were trying to outdo each other with who could build the biggest pipeline and drill the most holes. And it was really a low point in the history of this nation's debate over energy policy. And we're hoping, at least, that this lawsuit can now change the terms of the debate to get back to public interest economics. What is really grounded in good economics that is of benefit to the American people and is not just a chit to be used in the election cycle?
This is Radio EcoShock, and we've been digging into more skullduggery as public wealth slides cheap into private hands, endangering the future of all. Our guest is Dr. John Talberth, President and Senior Economist for the Center for Sustainable Economy. John, thank you so much for taking this stand.
Thank you, Alex. Good to be on the show.
I'm Alex Smith. Find links for this interview, including maps of the ocean rights being sold off, in my show blog at ecoshock.info. Find all the links from this program at ecoshock.info. Join us again next week for more Radio EcoShock as we report from around the world. Thank you for listening. Please don't forget to support Radio EcoShock. Help pay those bills. You can donate at our website at ecoshock.org or at our show blog at ecoshock.info. Some show music was provided by Vast Mandana at soundclick.com. We'll go out with a bit of a new song from Kukulkan, Mother Nature, Mother Earth.
Oh, Mother Nature, oh, Mother Earth, mankind ain't been so kind to you. Oh, Mother Nature, oh, Mother Earth, I can hear you crying. Deforestation, industrialization has taken a toll on you. Ice caps are melting, changing ocean currents, and the weather in the sky. Oh, Mother Nature, oh, Mother Earth, I can hear you crying. Coal and oil taken from below. the sea.